Welcome, everybody, to the Competition Archery Media Podcast. I'm your host, PJ Riley. Sitting alongside me is Josh Grine. Folks, the Competition Archery Media Podcast is brought to you by our fine platinum sponsors. We've got Hoyt, Matthews, PSE, Elite, True Ball and Excel, and Black Eagle Arrows. And today we have with us from the Great White North, Chris Perkins. Chris, thanks for being here today.
Hey, thank you guys.
Before we jump into anything, what's your world looking like these days? What do you got going on there while you're sitting in quarantine?
Not a whole lot going on. I haven't really touched the bow all too much, except for the hunting bow. Turkey season opened, two Saturdays ago now, so I've been hunting them pretty hard there. But as far as the tournament rig or anything like that, I haven't really touched it in a while.
No kidding. You're not one that needs to stay on top of it, or it's just nice to have a break, or what's your thought process there?
It's just nice to have a little bit of a break. Generally, this time of year is our busy time. We usually have Yankton, I think Paris, Texas, the ASA, and then Redding in there. So generally right now is really super busy for us. But with this whole ordeal going on with this COVID stuff, it's really put a kibosh on things. But I'll pick the tournament bow up a little bit here and there and shoot a few arrows, but I'm certainly not shooting 100 arrows or 50 arrows a day or anything like that.
Now, where are you at with the quarantine things? Is Canada starting to loosen things up at all, or I have no idea what Canada looks like now?
In around where I am, there was a couple cases, but I think there's a few people that I think are starting to go back to work this week, and then in the next couple weeks coming, I think a few things are going to start to open up, some small businesses and stuff, but it's pretty slow right now still, but I think there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and some things are starting to kind of loosen up and open up again.
Nice. Well, Chris, I know one of the things that I wanted to hear about today, because I don't know this, but tell me how you got into archery. I don't know the Chris Perkins backstory.
I shot a bow when I was, I guess I shot my first bow probably when I was like 3 or 4. It was more or less just, I had a little yellow fiberglass thing that mom and dad picked up at Walmart or something like that. And, I would just fling them anywhere I could, essentially. And I think it was on my 11th birthday. I think my dad bought me my first hunting bow or just a bow just to shoot. And it was actually a PSC Nova, and I still have it.
Nice.
And I think it was for my 11th birthday, and it, more or less just for hunting purposes. Here in Canada, we can start hunting at the age of 12. And I think from age 12 to age 15, we have to have somebody over the age of 18 that we have to hunt with.
Yeah.
And then once we get to 15, I think we can purchase our own tags and hunt solo. And more or less, the archery was, like I said, just for hunting purposes. My dad bow hunted. He never shot any tournaments or anything like that. And my mom shot a little bit, too. It was something they kind of did together. And I guess as I grew more interest into it, we eventually picked up a pair of 3D bows, tournament bows, or whatever that was. I think I shot a Champion Badger. And
nice.
My dad had a Hoyt, I want to say a Hoyt CyberTech at the time. And we shot a couple of local 3Ds and really had a big, a spark of interest in it. And I think one of my good buddies now come up to my dad at the time and said, if he really enjoys it and going to stick with it, I think one day he'll be really good. And kind of here I am today.
Yeah. You're in Ontario. Are you in a particularly rural part? Is there lots of hunting around where you're at?
There is lots of hunting, yeah. I live on 234 acres here on the farm, and we're about 3/4 of a mile back in off the road, so there's nobody around us. So
nice.
If I wanted to shoot the rifle off the front porch, I have the leisure of doing that.
Now, Chris, we know you said about shooting the rifle off the front porch there. You also do a lot of rifle shooting. So what's the competition on that side? Are you competitive in rifle shooting, or is that just a hobby?
More or less a hobby. I've won a couple of the CRPS matches, which is a Canadian Rimfire Precision Series. And I've won a couple of the ORPS, which is provincial, which is just Ontario Precision Rimfire Series. The CRPS is a Canadian, so that's a national championship series. I don't know if I've won a CRPS. I think I've got second or third at one. But I won a couple of the ORPS, and that's, like I said, that's just 22 stuff. Centerfire matches, I haven't shot a centerfire match, but I do have a rifle that's built for that. But during those times, it's, you know, I'm on the road shooting archery, right? And a lot of the NRL stuff or PRS stuff is stateside, and that's generally in the summer. So I haven't had the opportunity to get stateside and shoot either one of those series, but hopefully in the future I, you know, at some point I can do that.
Gotcha. And now, so you mentioned that you started out shooting 3D. That's mainly what you have there. Then how do you expand into indoor and, you know, other types of archery, field archery, et cetera?
The 3D, yeah, I started shooting indoor 3D actually at the time when we decided to shoot a couple tournaments. And I shot unmarked stuff. And I think from, I want to say from 2004 to 2009, I shot the IBO stuff. So I'm familiar with that. And I shot actually the earlier part of IBO, everything was still Mackenzie's. And, yes. I think the last year or maybe the last 2 years I shot IBO, that's when it was Reinhardt's. But I transitioned into the target side of things in 2008. More or less just for, I guess the indoor side of things, 18 meters. There was more of those events a weekend than there was a 3D,
right.
And they were much closer too. So, I could shoot more of those, than I could the 3Ds. They generally, like I said, in the summertime, there was lots, there was always 3D. I didn't shoot a lot of target, like I said, until 2008. Yeah. And then that's when I basically went all target stuff. And then I think in 2014 was the first ASA I shot.
Now, the for you in up in Canada there, when it was all Mackenzie targets, your spring targets, man, that had to be a pain just trying to get those arrows out of those old targets.
Yeah, a lot of the clubs here, they don't have new targets. So a lot of the rings and stuff like that are all shot up. So the
perfect
arrow pulling in the springtime when the targets are froze wasn't really all that bad because the targets were soft to begin with.
That's a good deal.
I have 30 Mackenzies for the ASA side of things, and they haven't been out of storage in 3 years.
No kidding. You don't so. You're probably traveling by the time it's open enough for you to set your targets up if you were going to do that, I would imagine.
Yeah, like this year was actually really good. I mean, we had 7 days I had 7 days or 8 days after Vegas to kind of prepare for Foley. Yeah. I didn't look a 3D target or shoot one. I just kind of quickly stuck I actually didn't even stick a tape on. I shot the sight and the sight tape that I shot all last season and just tried to match the bow and arrow speed the same as what I shot. And then when I got to Foley, just kind of crossed my fingers and prayed that everything kind of worked out.
I was standing beside you on that first arrow, and I saw your face when you just dead center. You're like, yeah, pinwheel. It works. Yep.
I was like, well, I guess it's okay. Yeah.
It must be nice to pick up a bow and pinwheel 50 yards. Like, yeah, I got it right.
Yeah, it's a good feeling, that's for sure.
So IBO to ASA, and in the ASA, you've always shot the known class, I believe. How come you would switch to that if you were brought up on IBO? Why not stay unknown?
There was a bit of a break in there. Like I said, 2008 is when I went pretty much the all target stuff. I think 2009 might have been the last year I shot an IBO tournament. So from 2009 to 2014, I never looked at a single 3D.
Okay.
Maybe shot a couple, you know, I maybe shot a couple local 3D tournaments, but they generally don't set the courses overly too hard. So,
right.
I mean, I can guess within 10 yards sometimes, but yeah, so there was a bit of a pause in between there. And to be honest with you, the first ASA that I shot in 14 was more or less just like a, you know, I want to try it and want to see what it's all about, so let's go.
Yeah.
Didn't really know much about it. Didn't even know the targets they shot there or how it even worked. So got there, you know, I set a bow up here, got there, shot the K50 at the time. There was no known pro or anything right. like that, or 50 pro or anything like that. So shot the K50 at the time and actually ended up winning that one. And it was in London, Kentucky, the one on the power lines that everybody hates. So yeah, so that's kind of that was my ASA debut there. And then from 14 to, you know, present is pretty much what I've been focusing on is ASA and the indoor stuff.
How about that competition now in the known pro class there? I mean, I can't believe the numbers that you guys put up every time. It just seems to be incredible competition out there.
It's stiff. I mean, you have a bunch of shooters in that class that, I mean, you know, could potentially win it every weekend. It's who puts two really good days together, or, you know, two mediocre days together. It's you can't have one smoking day and one, you know, not so great day, which generally I don't have the greatest first day. I don't really know why, but, yeah, it's tough. And like I said, you have a handful of guys that can walk away with that at any time. So,
but now last year you just missed Shooter of the Year, but you won several tournaments at the ASAs.
Yeah, I think last year, I want to say three out of the six. I think it was Foley, Augusta, and London. So Augusta and London, I think, were back to back.
How did that feel for you that year? Did you feel like you had still more in the tank, or, you know, how did you feel about last season?
Last season, I felt really good. The year before, which was the very first year I shot Matthews, I struggled a little bit. And I don't know, I think a lot of that had to do with just mental. I wasn't mentally prepared for that year. And I think I just kind of ran out of gas when it came to the ASAs. I think I only podiumed at one that year. And coming into 2018 or 2019, I guess, just had a totally different approach to the ASA scene. And, you know, ended up working out. And I felt I could have won more than three. There again, like I said, those other three, I probably just had one really, really bad day or not so hot day, and just, you know, kind of let the leaders or the top five just kind of walk away from me. But, you know, winning three and actually being, I don't think anybody's actually ever won more than one in the known pro, but don't quote me on that. Okay. One in a single year. So
yeah,
it was nice to have a bunch of them. And then, yeah, the Shooter of the Year stuff, you know, I tried real hard, but like I said, you know, that's all based off of qualification on the 40 targets. So
right,
you have one okay day and one really hot day, and you're trying to compete against somebody that puts two really good days together of, you know, plus 20 or higher. It's tough to stay with them, especially when they get on a roll.
So now you have a Vegas under your belt. You have, I know, at least one OPA. Do you have more than that? I know you've been in the mix there at OPA.
Yeah, OPA 18 and 19 back
to
back.
Okay, gotcha. Is there a tournament out there that you're just dying to win?
Well, I'd really like to win Vegas again. There's obviously a bunch of reasons about that one, but I won't get too deep in there. Indoor Nationals. I think that's the only NFAA tournament that I haven't won.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. But that's the only one.
Talking about Vegas without getting into the weeds, sitting here now, I mean, how do you feel about that? I mean, you got your moment, but you got your moment a year later. What does that look like for you? I have no idea.
There's kind of mixed emotions about that one, and it's a bit of a gray area. It's good to see rules enforced, and especially at a tournament of that caliber. And for me, I don't really count it as a win for me, to be honest with you. And I've had a few kind of people look at me with, you know, a bit of a puzzled look when I say that. And it's more or less just because, you know, I was there and I shot the arrows, but that was it. Like I didn't have anything on the floor at that moment. Getting the recognition a year later is a completely different situation in my opinion. Right. So like I said, when I say I don't really see it as a win for me, I more or less see it as a win for the sport. And you know, the NFAA really, and doing what they needed to do in that particular situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, that's one I'd like to win outright. And this year I definitely had the opportunity there. It just, it slipped up and you can't, indoors, you can't make mistakes.
Right. In that crowd especially. That's those guys are pretty good.
They are. Yeah. Everybody's good. Like I said, you're competing against the best of the best, and you can't make mistakes.
Now, Chris, you talked about the mental change and the different approach going into last season at the ASA. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What was the change? What did you work on to be able to go out and win three ASAs?
Yeah, it's just focus on what I needed to do. Work on me a lot more. My setups are generally really good. I've always spent a lot of time on setups to make them the best I can. And I think the only thing I really need to work on is just the mental approach and being positive. And trusting in my abilities to shoot an arrow. But in 2018, I really second guessed myself, I guess, and didn't really trust in what I was, you know, wanting to do, whether it be shoot an upper 12 or a lower 12, and just kind of second guessing my ability and just more or less had in my head, can I hit it, instead of, well, I know I can hit it. So last year, you know, basically just, I had a bow that worked really well. I had a lot of confidence in it. And, you know, I never once second-guessed myself last year. I made a decision, you know, and a game plan, and I would execute that decision and game plan. And, it's just like OPA, you know, last year, you know, being in fifth position, you have to hunt hard and you got to dig deep when you're in that position. I mean, you can't get any worse than fifth. So, you know, if you want to win it bad enough, you got to create a game plan and have a good mental game. So, you know, at every ASA at any shoot down, I'll always have a pen and a piece of paper and I'll write down what I want to do on each target. And that'll be what I do. And there'll be no change of that game plan during the shoot down, even if, you know, I climb my way back into first place after two or three targets. I'm going to execute that game plan, and, you know, I don't want to second guess myself or change it.
Whatever the last tournament you won from the ASA last year, I guess that would have been London. That one, yeah. One of the ones, I can't remember which it was, but you just shot at like every 14, and I think you hit most of them, if not all of them. It was... Or maybe that was Foley this year.
Foley, I was a little bit more aggressive this year.
Maybe it was Foley.
Than I would have been in London. I think London, I was in first place going into it, and obviously ended up winning it. Foley this year, I think it was in fourth.
Yeah, fourth. That was it.
And when you're in that position, you got to, like I said, you have to make a game plan. And I think the easiest way to do that is, like I said, I just take a piece of paper and a pen and write down, and that's what I'm doing. I'm not changing my mind.
That's incredible. I know it seemed from my side, just watching your confidence that you're talking about there, I could see that. I didn't know about the year before, but it just seemed to me, there's Chris. He's aiming at that. I expected you to hit everyone. And more often than not, you did. So, and you could tell by your reactions after the shot. Yep, that's what was supposed to happen. It just seemed like that confidence was coming through last season for sure.
Yeah, like I said, it's just I think the biggest thing I've always had to work on is just a mental game and you know, having confidence in my ability. The setups are another story. Generally, I have them on point before I get there. So,
what is your setup?
It's just me I have to work on.
Yeah, your ASA setup. What is that? What are you shooting? Poundage, all that stuff.
I shoot 65 pounds, 29 and 3/16 draw length. Now that's measured to the front of the riser. A super drive 25 with 140 in the front, and carbon to carbon it is 28.5. And then I shoot a regular super knock bushing with, on this particular setup, I'm shooting an asymmetrical biter and a flex fletch SK200 vane.
Out of the TRX 40 or 36, which one are you shooting?
I'm shooting the TRX 40 this year.
Now you shot a 38 last year, correct?
Yeah, I shot the 38 last year. Same exact rundown, same exact setup. 65 pounds, 29 and 3/16, 28.5-inch super drive 25 with 140, SK200 flex fletch. And the knock changed. I shot a 19-2 biter hunter knock last year.
Now, what's the difference? What's the feel between the 38 and the 40? What made you go to the 40 this year?
I've always shot a longer tournament bow, 38, 40. I think the shortest tournament bow I ever shot was a 37.5, would have been the Supra at the time. I found the 36 was just a little bit too short for me at my draw length. So I went back to the 40, kind of fell in love with that one, and just rolled with it indoors and shot a little bit with it outside before the ASA, and knew that bow, I think, was the best decision for me. So I made a decision early on that I was going to shoot the 40 all year.
Now, how much change do you do between indoor and 3D in your setup and tinkering and making changes?
More or less just poundage and arrow setup. The rest and stuff is all staying the same. I shoot a 10 thou launcher pretty much for everything except for an X10. I shoot an 8 thou blade for an X10. And then vanes, obviously. Vanes play a big factor in how much stability or steering or control, I guess I should say, that I want that vane to do on that arrow. If I'm running a heavier point, I'm going to have a little bit more vane. I'm wanting to steer that or control that point weight. So when it comes to indoors, I shoot a 250 grain point on the 2712. So I run a fairly long vane, you know, whether it be a 3.5-inch vane or a 4-inch vane, depending on what I feel is the most forgiving and I feel is the best setup for me. So I change quite a bit, I guess, when it comes to arrows, but as far as everything else, whether it be bow, draw length, draw weight, there's slight changes there, but it's not a big sporadic change.
65 indoor, you still shoot 65 pounds?
No, indoors, I think I shoot 61.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, you mentioned that Indoor Nationals was the one NFA event. So you've done some of the field. Do you get to shoot much field?
No, I've shot exactly 4 field rounds in my entire life. And in 20, I want to say, I think it was in 18, I was NFAA Shooter of the Year. And I think I won the fields that year.
Nice.
And that was the third field round or the fourth field round I'd ever shot.
How about that? Are there field courses up there where you live?
Not close to me, no. I got to drive about 4 hours to shoot one.
Yeah, I would imagine that's probably the one that's missing.
Yeah.
How about the world archery stuff, 50 meter? Have you ever shot in any of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The first year they went, world archery went to 50 meter was the year I won the Outdoor World Championships in 2011.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Not only did he shoot it, PJ, yeah. He won.
Hey, oh, well, yeah. I should have figured that out.
And that was the first senior world championships I had ever shot.
No kidding. Wow.
So what's the next tournament that can be your first? Because it seems like your first tournament, the first time you go, you're going to win. So
yeah, what's the next one?
Yeah. The next one I won was 2012 Reading. That was the very first year I shot that.
And you won it.
And then I did. And then in 2015 was the year, the last year they had the $1 million or 3-star tour.
Yes.
And I was the only archer to clean after day one and the only archer to ever clean that round period at the time.
No kidding.
And then, I won that one. At one down, 1199 out of 1200.
And did you drop your last arrow on that one?
No, I dropped my 101st of 120. The very first arrow at 60 yards.
Okay. Jeez. Knew you were getting down there, and Bruce was sweating it out.
Yeah.
How many 900s have you shot at Vegas?
Want to say three or four.
Okay, gotcha. What's the mentality there for you when you go to Vegas? Which day is the hardest, or are they all hard? What's that like for you mentally shooting in Vegas?
They're all the same. A 300 there, a 300 at home, a 300 in Lancaster, they're all exactly the same round. It should be treated no differently. It's Vegas. You know, it's a big hype. It's the largest payout. You know, everybody considers it the Super Bowl of archery.
Right.
And, so it's a lot of it is just mental. You know, I've talked to a lot of people and almost everybody will stay the same. And especially all the guys that shot 900 this year, everybody will stand there and say, you know what? I can shoot at home. I can shoot a 300 round at home every day. And probably never miss the 10 ring.
Yeah.
But I get here and it's just like I don't know what I'm doing.
Yes.
So it and you know what? It doesn't matter how many 900 you shoot there. It doesn't get any easier, I find. You know, I've always found that if I can just get there and just say to myself, you know what, it's exactly the same round at home and just there again, keep my mental game together, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a couple years ago,
I just got to get there.
Yeah. Your sister, I believe, is a trainer, and I think a couple years ago you started working with her. Obviously, people know you lost a lot of weight, put a lot of effort into getting in shape. Tell me about that turnaround in your life.
So my sister is a personal trainer on Beachbody. And I was actually probably her first client, student thing, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, no kidding.
For that. And that was in, I think, a 17 to 18 transition. And I lost 55 pounds, I want to say, in that year to year and a half.
Yeah. And did you do that for archery? Did you do that for health? All of the above? What was your motivating factor there?
Pretty much all of the above. There was a couple hunts I wanted to do, and I had hunted Montana the year before, and just the hills really took a toll on me. So I knew, I wanted to make a change for that, and I wanted to do more of those hunts, more or less backpack hunts, I guess. And so basically just there again, set my mind to it. That's what I wanted to do. And made it happen.
How about that? Now, how do you keep that going now? Is that a diet thing? Are you regularly working out? I see Crispin Duenas doing his freak show workouts all the time that make me sick. But what's that look like for you?
Well, before all this worldwide shutdown stuff happened, basically gym every day. I started working with a bodybuilding trainer. Not for bodybuilding. I'm not getting into that.
Right.
But started working with him back in I want to say December of last year, and obviously with this whole situation happening right now, that's kind of put a kibosh on the whole going to the gym every day. But yeah, just right now, just kind of watching what I eat. Obviously, still trying to stay active. I'm, you know, moving around pretty much all day, so
yeah,
I'm not really sitting on the couch being a couch potato or anything like that. But yeah, just watch what I eat and just stay moving.
And I believe one of your other favorite pastimes is cars. I believe you're a car guy. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. Well, I have one, but I'm not really a big. I don't have a big collection by any means. But yes, I do have a car.
It's a fast one too, if I remember. I think I've seen pictures of it.
It is a very fast one. Yeah.
He doesn't want to say too much about that, PJ.
If you can get it to stick to the pavement, then you're doing a good job.
Oh man. Well, up there in Ontario, tell us about the archery community there that you have around you. I actually don't know anything. I know that there are quite a few Canadian archers, Katie Roth, there's Aaron McLattery, a bunch of archers up there in Canada. Where you're at, like, do you have a local club? What's the archery scene like?
There's a couple clubs around. Like I said, it's not, there's not a lot of clubs here, and it's kind of tough to, it's tough to get into it, I guess you could say. 'Cause like I said, there isn't a lot of clubs and there isn't a lot of tournaments, unless you drive, like, well, for me, unless I drive a couple hours somewhere to shoot, you know, whether it be in Caledon there and shoot a, you know, a FIDA event or whatnot. But, clubs, I could probably count how many clubs are around me within an hour, probably on one hand. So as far as shooters around here, there's a few, but there's nothing like what you guys have, you know, over there. It's pretty small.
Would it be easier if you wanted to get into curling?
That's a good question. I don't really know. I've done it one time, and
it's
a lot harder than it looks. One time.
I thought everybody from Canada did curling. That's the stereotype I cling to.
No.
Everybody's into curling.
Yeah. No. You could pretty much say curl all year round if you wanted.
I believe that.
No thanks. So, Chris, with your success in archery, I mean, you've won it all. Field, FIDA, 3D, indoor. How do you set your schedule each year, and what events did you have on the calendar for this year before everything got changed?
Pretty much you shoot the same events every year. Obviously, you know, the indoor scene, Vegas, Iowa, Indoor Nationals, Yankton. I'm sure there's a couple, Lancaster. So those ones are always the big ones I want to do. Obviously the big named ones and when it comes to indoor stuff. And then outdoor, mainly it's just ASA. I'll shoot, you know, if I can get the time, and with everything kind of happening right now, nothing's really going on as far as team selections or trying to get scores to get re-ranked within Canada. I'd like to shoot the World Championships in another year, but right now that's going to be kind of tough with how they're going to do that for, you know, team selections. But mainly just ASAs, and obviously the big name indoor stuff is really my schedule that is 100% from year to year that I'll definitely be going to. And then if I want to add, you know, a couple in there, you know, whether it be, you know, a FIDA event here or something like that, if I have time, then I'll do that. But like I said, generally it's always going to be the same events every year.
Hmm. Do people know in your community up there, do they know, hey, this is Chris Perkins, you know, world-class archer here?
Like I said, archery is really not super, super popular. So anytime I've had people ask me, well, what do you do? And it's just like, well, I'm a professional archer. And they're just like, Oh, and you make money at that? That's always the reaction. It's just like, oh, and back when I won the world championships, everybody's just like, oh, so you're done now. It's like, no, I'm just beginning.
Oh man, that's amazing.
So like I said, it's not overly popular where I am.
Yeah.
Or in Canada to begin with, I guess, unless you're in that community and you know what archery is and you know what, you know, the FIDA events and the 3D events are, people don't really know what's going on or really what it is unless you're actually in it.
Right. Right. Now I forget, are you a hinge guy or a thumb button?
Hinge.
You shoot the hinge.
Thumb button would be an absolute train wreck.
For you.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I could probably do it for about 30 arrows, but then that's about it.
Meaning that you think you'd punch it?
Not punch it, but more or less anticipate it, I guess you could say.
Oh, gotcha, yeah. What release are you shooting?
I shoot a Trueball HT Pro.
Oh, okay, gotcha. And what is your what's your shot activation type? I found it interesting. We were just talking to Jacob Marlowe last week, and he was telling us that he only likes 7 or 8 pounds of holding weight, and he's kind of a relaxation method archer. What's your setup there? Which mods are you shooting on the 40 there, and how do you activate your shot?
So I shoot the 80% mods. Okay. I get back into the wall. I'll pull into the wall just a little bit, just to obviously get some even pressure there, and so that the bow doesn't want to jump forward on me during the shot. But I'll relax my index finger and increase pressure on the next two.
Okay.
My middle finger, my ring finger, I'll increase pressure on those, and it's just a very small weight transition between those three fingers that actually make my release go.
That's awesome. You're the first pro I've talked to that shoots the 80% mods on the 40. I thought I was the only person I knew who did that. And now I can just say, hey, Chris Perkins does it. So yeah, that's how I shoot it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody likes that big holding weight. I just can't hold the bow still when I have that.
Well, I mean, I've got it. I'm holding, I think, 15 or 16 pounds with them. So I've got it jacked up a little bit so that I do have that holding weight, but the 70 Vs, that valley for me is too much. I find that if I relax and I don't feel that bow or the cables come off the wall.
Right.
So that's why I've always gone to a more positive mod where it's either on the wall or it's off the wall.
Gotcha. Yeah. And you were mentioning hunting and some hunts that you want to do. Do you have any big ones planned for this year? I don't know. Are you working towards any kind of slam? You have it all up there in Canada. I'm so jealous. But yeah, what's your hunting schedule looking like?
I think I'll be out west again, probably for elk again this year. I'm not really too sure on that one yet. I have enough preference points, I think, for Wyoming elk. But I don't imagine I'll be going on that one this year. And then Illinois whitetail, I do that every year. And I think that's it. I think this year, I think I only have, well, when I put in for the points, I think I'll only have 2 or 3 points for Iowa. So I think I need another 1 or 2 years before I would essentially draw that. But then I'll do the whitetails here, kind of around home. And
I was going to say, you're coming down
all on the list as of right now.
You're coming down here to hunt. Man, you got it all up there in Canada. Saskatchewan. Yeah. Alberta, Saskatchewan. Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, in BC, you can actually, British Columbia, I think you can shoot 19.
No kidding.
Grand Slam.
Holy
in one province.
Yeah, man. Did you ever get to do caribou?
Nope, never been on a caribou hunt.
Never caribou. Yeah, that used to be such a good one back in the day. That's my favorite thing to hunt. I love them, but now it got
astronomical. That's one I'd like to do. I would certainly like to do that one, but it's not top priority as of right now to go on a caribou hunt.
Gotcha, yeah. Last year at Augusta, There, you were at full draw, and one of our cameramen, unfortunately, sort of cut in front of the target there. We were wondering what was going through your mind at that point. Fortunately, you had a pretty good lead, so there wasn't danger. But what did you think when you saw that guy in your sight picture?
Honestly, I don't even really remember it, but I just remember everybody freaking out, and I come to full draw, and there's this dude with a camera walking by, and I'm like, oh, okay, well... guess I better draw down before I end up cutting one loose into the guy's leg or torso or something like that, right? So, but honestly, after that, you know, it was just, okay, like, are we ready to do this thing or what?
Well, I remember thinking, oh, man, I'm just glad that you had the cushion that you did, that it wasn't a pressure-packed yeah. shot that you needed to make or something.
No, Chris, we heard from Mike Terrell last week that we were looking like we will be in London at the end of June. Any word in Canada if you'll be able to travel to that? What's the situation with the border?
That I don't know. As of right now, the borders are still closed, and it's only essential traffic only. So don't really know if they'll let me go to an archery tournament as essential traffic, but... hopefully before that time arrives, there's actually that ban is lifted and things have kind of reopened by then. So all I can do right now is just cross my fingers and hope I can get across there and compete in those events.
Tell them you need to get paid. It's essential.
Yeah, this is essential.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't think about it as them trying to keep you in. I thought it was just trying to keep us out.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's there is in and out traffic, but I believe it's essential traffic only. And I could be wrong on that. They couldn't be letting anybody in or out or vice versa, but we'll see. Hopefully, we've got some time before then and hopefully some things have kind of cleared up and things have opened up again.
Well, we hope to see you there. One of the other things we've got...
I hope to be there.
Yeah. We have lots of people at home staying engaged and watching our podcast. And where can they follow you at on social media?
So I've got two pages. I've got obviously my personal page and my private page on Facebook. Crystal Perkins, you know, just personal page. And then Crystal Perkins, professional archer, as my athlete page. And then also Instagram is cperk0501. So whatever's pretty much you post on Instagram will get posted on to my athlete page on Facebook. So a few more things I'll probably post on Instagram than Facebook. But they can go there and give me a like and a follow.
Well, great. Chris, thanks so much. It is always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right, everybody. That's another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. We certainly appreciate your sticking with us today. And most of all, we appreciate Chris Perkins. Chris, thanks for taking some time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
We hope to see Chris and lots of other archers at a competition before too long. That's another episode of the Competition Archery Media Podcast. You can follow us wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Don't forget to go back through the library and you can check out lots of older episodes. Thanks for joining us today.